Oh, shit. Fuck. I forgot I needed a zinger.
Do something problematic. Let's start off on a good foot.
Okay.
More like shrillery, Clinton. Am I right?
I can't tell if I want to do a pure joke or something that touches on actual commentary to make it clear that I hate Hillary Clinton.
We are off to a good start, Peter. Holy shit.
I've been a little bit worried about this one.
Same. We may not get to the email scandal. We may just talk about Hillary Clinton the entire time as like a social construction.
Maybe the zinger is just me being like, Mike, this is the episode where I get canceled.
Oh, okay. Do you want to do that? Emails?
All right, let's do it.
Peter.
Michael.
What do you know about the Hillary Clinton email scandal of 2016?
Yeah, you know, this isn't like when she suggested that we rig Palestinian elections, Michael. This is serious.
So the genesis of this episode is that when we were recording the liberal fascism episode, we had like that chapter about how like Hillary Clinton is fascist. And then we ended up talking for like 45 minutes about the social construction of Hillary Clinton and like doing a bunch of other sort of side topics. And then we eventually decided that we need to either talk about Hillary Clinton for like 2 seconds or 2 hours.
Yeah.
And so this is the 2 hours. We're doing it.
And we discussed this episode a little bit in advance. And you said that you don't want to spend the entire episode relitigating the 2016 election. And I said, I made it quite clear, I think.
And you said no.
That I do want to spend the entire episode relitigating the 2016 election.
Fuck. I was going to do a bunch of scoping. Like, I'm going to keep Peter on topic. How do I trick Peter into staying on the emails? But this might not work.
This will be a polarizing episode
for
both us as individuals and our listeners. Because Michael, moderate centrist king, has a rich appreciation for Hillary Clinton.
Centrist swine, Michael Hobbs. I get this all the time.
Yeah, yes. I've heard the term reactionary centrist floated.
We finally have a person to apply it to, Michael Hobbs. So, I did sort of carve out some space at the beginning to talk about Hillary Clinton in general, simply because whenever she comes up in like any context with other people, I'm sort of like clenched.
Yeah.
I'm like, are they like a reasonable person who dislikes Hillary Clinton for like kind of justifiable reasons? Or are they someone who dislikes her for like the crazy reasons? And so I have a feeling that many of our listeners are probably feeling some similar beclenchment.
Mm-hmm.
I have many notes. I've spent weeks reading about her. I have bullet points under the non-disingenuous case against Hillary Clinton and the disingenuous case against Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, you know, I feel that tug of war in my soul, right? Mm. Where part of me really does hate Hillary Clinton and part of me is defensive of her because so many of her critics are absolutely ludicrous people.
Deranged. And also, there are many grand tragedies of the 2016 election, but one of the tragedies, especially of this email scandal and this bullshit, like the Clinton Foundation stuff and all the sort of fake criticism, is that it totally overshadowed any legitimate criticism.
Right, like the Clinton kill list. Here we go.
Let's clench over, Peter. Now I know what category
my
you're
own
in.
My own prep is also took me weeks, and I will now be walking person by person through the Clinton kill list.
I did actually want to start with like the non-disingenuous case against Hillary Clinton. I think that maybe this is a spicy take. Ultimately, she's like a fairly standard center-left politician with all of the good and all of the bad that comes along with that.
I agree with that, except I would say center-right.
Okay, well,
but I hear
by American standards.
Sure,
by American standards
maybe.
Here.
Not conceding.
So in the 90s, she supports the crime bill. She voted for the Patriot Act. She supported the war in Iraq. She votes for No Child Left Behind. She opposed gay marriage for much of her career in public life. She does a bunch of like violence in video games shit after Columbine. She supported NAFTA. She continues to support charter schools and the death penalty. Even now, it appears she doesn't favor legalizing weed. She wants to like legalize medical marijuana, but like leave it up to the states, which I think is like the biggest fucking slam dunk to just like legalize fucking weed nationally. Like, it's ridiculous. As recently as 2007, she's against giving driver's licenses to undocumented immigrants. When she's running for Senate, she does a bunch of like ugly, like anti-immigrant rhetoric. Her, you know, centrist plans for her presidency were all this like Baroque systems of like tax credits and shit. Like this, the thing that drives us nuts about Democrats, it's always like really complicated, like means testing levers and pulleys and shit rather than just like giving everybody money and then like taxing the rich people back if it's that fucking important to you. I believe she still says this now, but she definitely said it in 2016 that like single payer healthcare would never work. She has deep ties to the financial sector, as we all know from these like talks that she gave at Goldman Sachs. I feel like all of these are like perfectly reasonable reasons to just be like, I would rather vote for somebody who doesn't have these positions.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and you know, to put a lot of my criticism of her in perspective, so you sort of understand my basic position. I consider her to be a neoconservative in the sort of traditional sense when it comes to foreign policy, right? And her positions towards the Middle East have always been hawkish, lacked regard for sovereignty in the Middle East. Her and Obama's approach in Libya was brutal.
Again, wild that we talked about her fucking emails for a year and a half and did not talk about like her record as Secretary of State. When like we were like disastrously bungling the war in Afghanistan, and when like there are now emails that we know about where it's like they knew about the CIA drone strikes and they were like, should we object to these? Like maybe one or two went too far.
Right.
I don't know that she's like any worse than a lot of other centrist Democrats, honestly, but it's like this entire generation of Democrats, you look back on their record from like the 90s, the early 2000s, and like it looks really fucking bad.
She's an avatar for that third way bullshit, you know, an avatar for a Democratic establishment that tried to hedge right on nearly every single issue, from domestic economic issues to foreign policy, right? And, you know, we have seen where that got us.
I think we're roughly on the same page as far as like, I think it is great to judge public figures by their record in public life.
Yeah.
There's like a sickness among journalists where they think that just because something is secret, it's important. And I think that, you know, there are cases of this happening, right? Like Watergate and shit. But like in general, most politicians are fairly easy to judge by like what they are or are not doing for the public, as far as like their votes and their speeches and shit. Mm-hmm. We have this thing where in public, Hillary Clinton is like a centrist politician and like has gotten a lot of stuff wrong and like cringily extremely wrong over the years. But then according to the right and to like weirdly to like the left-wing media, they think that there's like this iceberg of like corruption and murder and graft underneath it. And like there has never been any evidence of that.
She's also a politician who is the subject of more completely ludicrous smears and lies than maybe any other politician.
Yeah.
And also the recipient of more misogynistic political analysis than any other politician. And I think that one is probably unquestionably true.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's weird about discussing her as someone who's like a critic of hers from the left is that you can't possibly disentangle all of this.
Yeah, of course.
If you go back and look at like the media coverage of the 1992 presidential campaign, so clearly just like, should women be allowed to talk?
Yeah. Oh, totally.
You know, what we talked about in the liberal fascism episode was her like writings about children's rights.
Yeah.
And a ton of the criticism that was levied at her in the early 90s was just like, should first ladies be able to talk about substantive policy, right?
Yeah.
She was pushing for expanded healthcare coverage.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Nancy Reagan was doing war on drugs shit, which didn't clock as political.
I mean, this kind of leads us to the disingenuous case against Hillary Clinton. What really fascinated me is the pattern with Hillary Clinton is the same pattern that I've seen in moral panics over and over again, where it's like people take these examples of fairly benign behavior and then they use them as a metaphor for much worse things of which there is no evidence. So I found a Christopher Hitchens article from 2008, which was called The Case Against Hillary Clinton. And he's like really going to like lay it out.
Yeah. I remember this.
And his opening anecdote was about this thing from 1995 when she was first lady and she was in London for something and she met Sir Edmund Hillary, who mm-hmm. was one of the two first people to climb Mount Everest. The other person was Tenzing Norgay. And she's like making small talk with Edmund Hillary. And she's like, hey, did you know you're the reason I have two L's in my name? My mom was a big fan of yours and she named me Hillary after you, Sir Edmund Hillary, right? Mm-hmm. This somehow was like on tape or whatever, ended up in press reports. People look into it and it turns out Hillary was born in 1947 and Edmund Hillary didn't climb Mount Everest until 1953. She would have been 6 years old. And so there's no way that she could have been named after Hillary, whatever. Christopher Hitchens like uses this as like, look at what she'll do to gain power. Right. Look at the way she manipulates people around her. And then of course, if you actually look into it, Hillary Clinton had never used this anecdote anywhere else. It didn't show up in like her biographies. It appears that her mom like told her this at some point.
Which, by the way, is what immediately came to my mind when you told me the timeline. I was like, oh, I bet her mom just said it.
A benign explanation is available for this kind of thing. But it's like people immediately leap to the like, look how fucking bad she is, right? I listened right. to a right-wing podcast about this and they were like, they went on this long tirade. They were like, she's fucking sick. She's a fucking psychopath. It was like so brutal. And what they were talking about was registering a web domain, not in her name. One of her aides registered a URL and like used his own name on the registration papers.
It's very funny to go full bitch eating crackers on Hillary Clinton.
It's like I do think that like an anecdote can be a symbol of something much larger.
Yeah.
But you have to have evidence of the much larger thing. You can't just right. constantly point to symbols. Like with Trump, you can tell these little anecdotes about like he lies about his like golf score or something. And it's like mm-hmm. symbolic of the way that he fucking lies about everything. But we have evidence that he fucking lies about everything.
Right.
With Clinton, it's like there's this deep corruption, but like we never actually get the deep corruption. We just get these surface level little symbols of it.
Also, like if a little white lie in conversation is enough to declare a politician a psychopath, then they all are.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I mean, is there a single politician yes. you couldn't find an anecdote like this about?
I also want to go out of my way to say that like she would have been way better than Donald Trump. Like it's not close.
Yeah.
Center left politicians are in fact preferable to far right politicians.
Right.
Like her platform on healthcare, did I love it? No, it was way better than the status quo. She wanted to raise the minimum wage to $12. Do I wish that was higher? Yes. Is $12 better than $7.50? Also, yes.
The argument that Trump wouldn't have been that bad was ludicrous at the time, yeah. and it's more ludicrous in retrospect.
Yes.
It's a ludicrous argument.
So, Peter, what is your understanding of like the actual facts of the email scandal?
Yeah, Hillary Clinton had private email. Well, I'm gonna use terms like servers, which I don't actually.
Yeah, I still don't fucking. I've been reading about this for 2 weeks. I don't know what the fuck a server is. It's fine.
Hillary Clinton had like private email servers. She used her BlackBerry to communicate with her aides
yes.
and colleagues, etc. That's how she did emails.
Yes.
And then she gets to the State Department, and the State Department, generally speaking, would require or have guidelines that you use their servers, right? But yeah. she does not transition to their servers. She maintains her own BlackBerry. She doesn't want to use their computers. And there is a question about confidential information, classified information, right? Because mm-hmm. At least theoretically, there could have been classified information being shared in these emails on unprotected or less protected servers.
Yes.
That is my memory of okay. this off the dome.
That was pretty good. The way that Clinton describes it in her book, she says, it was a dumb mistake, but an even dumber scandal, which I kind of agree with.
I agree with that too, but it also annoys me that she would put it that way.
We'll see if this episode like makes you like her more or less. I do think that like this is a very understandable story. Like when you hear it in chronological order, if we just go over like what actually happened, the striking thing about Clinton's book, Comey's book, and there's various investigations of this over the years is that they really don't disagree on the facts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first thing to know if we like rewind all the way back is that like a lot of politicians don't use email very much.
Yeah.
You know, part of this is like to avoid fucking records requests because they're like all corrupt fucking dingbats. And some of it is like they're just all old as fuck. So like John McCain did not send or receive an email his entire life.
Yeah. And especially when you think about like 2008.
Yeah. I honestly think the fact that Clinton is 62 when she becomes Secretary of State is like very important to the story and like really reminds me of like all of the boomers in my life and like how they use technology. Mm-hmm. She says in her book, she says, I didn't send a single email when I was in the White House as First Lady or during most of my first term in the U.S. Senate. I've never used a computer at home or at work. It was not until 2006 that I began sending and receiving emails on a BlackBerry phone. I had a plain old AT&T account like millions of other people and used it both for work and personal email. That was my system and it worked for me. So this is what she's used to. All of her emails, professional, personal, everything comes and goes out of the BlackBerry, right?
But she's never used a computer.
I mean, she's never had one anyway.
Yeah.
I think it's very like hard for like people like us who don't have like teams.
You don't have a team?
To understand like what it is like the daily reality of these people. Most of us just assume that she's like sending and receiving emails all the time when now that we've seen all the fucking emails, the vast majority of emails are like one sentence or they're like forwarding it and be like, FYI.
Yeah.
And they're not substantive. They're not thoughtful. It's like everything takes place in like in-person meetings or phone calls. Like she says her and Bill do not like they've never sent an email to each other. They call because they're boomers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So in 2007, Bill Clinton has a server installed in his house. It's not clear like whether either of these boomers sort of like knew what that meant or whatever. They're just like, okay, this is going to make it easier, like more secure. It's encrypted, whatever. Clinton starts using HRL5 at mysingular.blackberry.net as an email address, which is the most boomer fucking email address I've ever heard in my life. So that's the situation when on January 21st, she is sworn in as Secretary of State.
Man, this could have all been avoided if Obama wasn't the type to just want to be liked by everyone. So he was like, look, Hillary just ran a really weirdly racist primary campaign against me. I will make her Secretary of State.
Yet another election I refuse to relitigate. We're not touching 2008 in this fucking episode.
Well, guess what? I'm bringing up the Somali garb picture that her team circulated.
Jesus Christ.
This is all stored within a very specific compartment of my brain.
Yeah, on your servers, on your little brain, your little contempt brain servers. So she starts as Secretary of State. She has this BlackBerry email account that she's using that I think everybody sort of knows is like super fucking janky. And dealing with classified information is just a giant fucking hassle. Like she has to lock up her BlackBerry in some like weird safe when she goes into work because they're afraid that like the Russians or whoever is going to hack it and turn it into a microphone. And it's like, okay, so I just don't have my device with me at work all day. And like, I don't really know how to use a computer. Like it's just this giant fucking hassle.
By the way, whenever I hear about the like machinations of our intelligence operations, it always makes me a little bit anxious. Like, do we have technology that can sense whether the Russians are hacking the Secretary of State's phone? It's like, no, just put it in the no hack box.
And then there, one of the dark ironies of this is that this entire thing is about email security, right? Like whether it's being stored on like private servers or government servers or whatever. The State Department servers were hacked. Her personal server was not hacked. The Pentagon was also hacked during this time. So it's like the entire thing just fucking dissolves into smoke where it's like, what are we actually talking about here? Like she put them on a more secure server.
Or like at least a server that was less of a target, right?
Although it was also a target at that time, but yes.
Yeah, fair enough.
So on January 23rd, 2009, 2 days into her tenure as Secretary of State, actually I'm going to email this to you or I'll text this to you. This is from the FBI report.
Okay. On January 23rd, 2009, Clinton contacted former Secretary of State Colin Powell via email to inquire about his use of a BlackBerry while he was Secretary of State. In his email reply, Powell warned Clinton that if it became public that Clinton had a BlackBerry and she used it to do business, her emails could become, quote, official records and subject to the law. Powell further advised Clinton, be very careful. I got around it all by not saying much and not using systems that captured the data. Clinton indicated to the FBI that she understood Powell's comments to mean any work-related communications would be government records.
This is fascinating to me. At the heart of this entire thing, we have Colin Powell, the previous Secretary of State, admitting that he used a fucking AOL.com address the entire time that he was Secretary of State. And he says, I got around it by not saying much and not using systems that captured the data. This guy did what Hillary Clinton is accused of.
Right.
He specifically skirted the rules so that he would not be subject to like FOIA requests and shit. To this day, we still do not have emails from like the early 2003 period, which like I would kind of like to see.
Hey, going to lie to the UN, LOL.
What's interesting is he tells her He's like, yeah, just use an external email. Like, just, you know, here's how to get around it, whatever. Clinton does not take his advice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She starts using this email address, hdr22@clintonemail.com.
Clintonemail.com?
I know.
Is that,
I know. Come on. It's kind of amazing it didn't get hacked because it's so fucking obvious.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you found that domain, you would assume it was like a troll who was sitting on the domain rather than the actual one.
So she starts using this personal account, the sort of the kludge that she comes up with to comply with eventual records requests and to only have one device with her, is she basically moves all of her correspondence, personal and professional, onto this one email address. So for her entire time as Secretary of State, she does not use a state.gov email address, and all of her emails. So like she's her mother dies while she's in office, and like her dealings with like the estate, emailing Chelsea, like how's life, all of her personal emails, and all of her like the president of this country just got assassinated emails are all on the same fucking account. So to me, the best argument that like she didn't do this to avoid scrutiny or for like any like corrupt, deep, evil reason is that this is such a fucking stupid solution to the problem. She is ensuring that there is going to be a conflict between her professional and her personal emails because they're all in one fucking inbox.
Right.
I think when people like process the email scandal, what they think happened is that like she had her like hillary@state.gov email, and then she was like shunting people to this like secret personal address. She's like, okay, this is spicy shit. Like, email me the kill list to like hillary@clintonemail.com,
right?
That's
right.
Not what she was doing. It was all in one place.
It seems to me like what we're building toward, and this is sort of how I've always viewed it, as that this was essentially just an act of medium negligence, maybe medium to high, depending on how much you care about national security or whatever.
I would say medium to low, but yeah.
I guess what I say by medium, what I mean by like medium to high is like if I were to combine my my work and personal emails, the stakes are quite low. You know what I mean? Whereas like the worst case scenario here is relatively bad, I guess.
Well, also, I mean, one thing that has like genuinely given me nightmares about this is that it's very clear that like no one on her team thought about this or like thought it was a remotely big deal at the time, which, you know, looking back obviously is like very silly. But at the time, people were basically like, okay, it's not actually against the rules. There's like a sort of recommendation, like we'd prefer if State Department employees didn't use personal emails, but like it happens. And like if you end up using, you know, your Gmail or whatever, like make sure you retain all the documents for, you know, FOIA requests, whatever.
Yeah.
So they thought that this was above board as long as they retained all of the emails, and they knew that her servers were encrypted.
But they were advised, right? They were advised by State. Isn't that right? Am I misremembering that?
There's actually some debate about whether people at State knew that this was happening. It seems like most people sort of didn't know that this was on an external server, because when emails came in from Hillary, they just said H. They didn't like say H at anything. And we later find out she only emailed with 13 people her entire time at the State Department.
Imagine the panic within State if some security folks got an email that was from like hillary@clintonemail.com. They'd be like, what the fuck?
I know. There is actually a pretty funny section in her book where one of the emails that eventually comes out is her complaining that she's trying to talk to Obama, but nobody on the White House operator line will believe that she's Hillary Clinton and she can't get through. She's like, how do I do this? How do I prove that I'm me?
Well, ironically, the best way would have been to start leaking classified information about people she's assassinated.
We're going to get into the sort of like mechanics of how all this becomes public in a second. But like before we do, I think it's also important to stress this is all about the storage of digital information.
Yeah.
At no point in this entire scandal does anybody accuse Hillary Clinton of like sharing classified information with foreign governments, right? Or leaking it to the press, or like blurting something out to someone who shouldn't know it. Every single one of the people that she was emailing had top secret clearance.
Right. It's about information security procedures.
I was trying to think of like a metaphor. It's like, you know, you come downstairs in the morning and you realize your roommate has like left the door unlocked overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, okay, well, nothing got stolen. Like, there's no effect of this, but also, like, yeah, we'd prefer it if you locked the door, right? Like, you might want to talk to your roommate about that. But it's not even that bad, because the emails were on an encrypted server that didn't get hacked. So it's like, you come downstairs and your roommate has, like, deadbolted the door, but, like, the deadbolt he used was not, like, an approved deadbolt.
Right.
Okay, well, ultimately, the door was locked. It just wasn't the sort of, like, official technical lock that we were supposed to use. Like,
right.
I really cannot stress, like, how long it took me to, like, truly accept that, like, this is what the entire scandal was about, was literally just the storage of information on non-government servers.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean, this is a lens into how the media can get manipulated.
Yeah.
It pretty plainly doesn't matter that much whether Hillary was using the Department of State's approved encrypted server or her own. But the way that this sort of, like, resonates in our political and cultural memory is indicative of a whole lot of weird neuroses that our media maintains and sort of projects onto the general public.
I mean, one of the things I do think is, like, worth stressing is that, like, other people who have been busted for this over the years, it's been, like, a very minor issue. So in his book, Comey says, in 2011, David Petraeus had given multiple notebooks containing troves of highly sensitive, top-secret information to an author with whom he was having an affair. In contrast to those Hillary Clinton corresponded with, the author did not have the appropriate clearance or a legitimate need to know the information, which included notes of discussions with President Obama about very sensitive programs. He even allowed the woman to photograph key pages from classified documents.
Yeah, but this is different because he's trying to get laid. That's an affirmative defense under the law.
And then, as if to underscore that he knew he shouldn't do what he did, he lied to FBI agents about what he had done, despite all of this clear and powerful evidence on facts far worse for him than for Secretary of Clinton. And after he demonstrably lied to the FBI, the DOJ charged him only with a misdemeanor after he reached a plea bargain agreement. Mm-hmm. In 2015, he admitted guilt and agreed to a $40,000 fine and probation for 2 years.
I love that he was the director of the CIA, but still felt like he had to prove that he has access to confidential
it's
stuff.
Like, look how cool my stuff is.
Yeah, check it out. You want to see it? You want to see it? It's like, dude, you're the, like, she knows that you have it. Relax. You don't have to keep doing this.
I know you work at Cinnabon. You don't have to bring me another one. I get it. I trust you. It's like my friends in high school. But so I do think, I mean, to me, it's like sort of at the most, it's like an administrative violation. And like this fucking guy who, like, lied to the FBI and, like, obstructed justice, got nothing.
You have to keep criminal history in mind, too. And when you have a spotless record like Petraeus, you get off light.
Whereas with Clinton, you got Seth Rich, you got Vince Foster, you got the Clinton Foundation.
Look, you can't do this and Benghazi in, like, a 2 year span.
So this is kind of her system with email as she is Secretary of State. Uh-huh. In February of 2013, she resigns as Secretary of State. So she's only in office for 4 years. After she leaves, there's all this, God, the FBI report goes into this for, like, pages of detail. There's, like, this tedious shit about, like, moving the emails to a new server. Mm-hmm, it's like, it's not even her. It's like Bill's people are like, oh, we need, like, better security or, like, whatever. They're changing to a different server, something, something. So as they migrate all of the emails to a new server, they go out of their way to save all of the emails. Then in 2014, there's the Benghazi committee, of course.
Yeah.
Which kind of stumbles on it in true Clinton fashion. They're casting the net as wide as possible to try to catch her in something, right? This is how we got Lewinsky.
Yep.
And so the Benghazi committee subpoenas all emails from every Secretary of State going back to Madeleine Albright. Madeleine Albright, like, never emailed. And then Condoleezza Rice, who, like, did have a personal email when she was at State, lies and just says, like, oh, I didn't have any.
Queen.
But, like, we know that's not true.
Queen.
And then, of course, Powell is just like, oh, we deleted everything.
Some of this stuff, it does feel very odd to have a lengthy conversation about this where it's sort of like, as you can see, when Condoleezza Rice was facilitating genocide, she was using the proper servers.
Yeah, I know.
Madeleine Albright was facilitating genocide, she was also using the proper servers.
I think this maybe is like a fair critique of her, that like her political instincts are kind of bad.
Yeah.
She thinks that if she turns over all of her emails about this Benghazi thing, like, well, that'll clear it up. Basically, as soon as she gets this request, she forwards it along to her lawyers and she's like, we have all the emails saved. Can you guys just like give them all of the professional emails? Like, I don't, you know, my personal stuff is in there. Like, make sure you separate that stuff out. But like, just give them all the relevant stuff. And like, she deliberately casts the net wide. She's like, anything that has anything to do with this, I'm transparent. I don't think I like did anything wrong about that. Like, I feel comfortable with it. So like, just give them everything, right? And so they assign a lawyer to go through who basically does a bunch of like advanced control effing.
Yep. Don't belittle my profession by pointing out that all we're doing is advanced control effing.
So yeah. She pulls out the anything from or to a state.gov email address. She eventually pulls 30,000 emails. I think importantly, Clinton did not like oversee this process at all. There wasn't like her meddling. Again, this none of this is like public yet. This isn't a scandal.
Right.
She thinks she's done all this by the book. She's like, yeah, go in there, give them all the emails they want.
Yeah.
Eventually they do find, you know, it's like 30,000 emails. And then they also find like 30,000 personal emails. So it's like all of her professional stuff and all of her non-professional stuff. And another important thing I think about this is that this is seen as like very dastardly, that like eventually she deletes all of the personal emails and it's like, oh, what's in there? What's she hiding? But even if she had had a state.gov email address, this process still would have taken place. Like a lot of people who have government email addresses or like university email addresses also use them for personal business. So if you're like a university professor and your emails about like whatever topic get FOIA'd, you go through them and are like, oh, this one's to my mom. You guys don't get to see that. That's not part of the FOIA request.
It's not within the scope of the request.
Yeah.
Right?
This gets kind of like merged with the private server thing. But like it that's totally irrelevant to this. Like either way, Clinton would have separated out her personal emails and would have been totally within her rights to delete them.
Uh-huh.
People can do whatever the fuck they want with their personal emails.
I sort of go the opposite way. And I just feel like if you're the Secretary of State, I want to see your personal emails.
That should, everything.
Every year, everyone at, in the cabinet should have to publish all of their personal emails. I want to read that shit.
There's also something interesting about how, because she's been under so much like bad faith, unprecedented scrutiny, I think it does make Hillary Clinton a little bit cagey.
Totally agree. And I think that's also why she gets defensive of herself in a lot of these situations, because, there's no other way to deal with the type of scrutiny and amount of scrutiny that she gets other than being in sort of like a constant mode of self-protection, right?
Yeah. If I had people looking into my like personal business like this closely, I would also probably fucking just delete my emails to my mom.
Right.
There's all these stories on Fox News about how like she ordered them to destroy the emails. It's like, well, yeah, because you fucking people are going to twist everything. Like you turned emails about cheese pizza into child porn.
Right.
And the emails that did come out that had like minor little, like at one point she says to John Podesta, she's like, wear warm socks for your cold feet. And like, there's a whole fucking New York Times article about it. The tiny glimmers of personality that we did get in these emails became fucking national news stories. This is not weird. And also deleting them, I mean, they're her emails. She can do whatever she wants.
Especially when it reveals her perverted relationship with John Podesta. Hillary Clinton, foot guy.
This is all happening in December 2014. None of this is public at all.
Mm-hmm.
The story breaks in March of 2015, which is actually slightly before she announces her campaign for presidency. However, the story actually breaks in 2013, way before this. So Gawker accidentally breaks this story when there's a leak of Sidney Blumenthal's emails. This is this like former New Yorker writer guy who became an aide to Bill and then a friend of Hillary. And he's like sends her memos and shit all the time. Mm-hmm. He's like kind of a crank.
Right.
This Guccifer hacker, whatever thing, hacks into his emails and like leaks it. And Gawker writes an entire story basically about like this crank dude is like still like advising Hillary Clinton. And like, do we feel great about that? I think he's actually one of the people who like really went after Obama in 2008.
Hillary, don't listen to those cranks. Rely on your good friend Henry Kissinger, please, for all advice.
But so what's amazing is they publish a screen grab of Sidney Blumenthal's like inbox, which was leaked. And it shows this like HDR22 at ClintonEmail.com email address. And there's one paragraph in the story that says, and why was Clinton apparently receiving emails at a non-governmental email account? The address Blumenthal was writing to was hosted at the domain ClintonEmail.com, which is privately registered via Network Solutions. It's most certainly not a government account. This little tiny aside of like, hey, it is kind of weird. Like, why isn't it a state.gov account?
Gawker accidentally hands Donald Trump the 2016 election.
It is, to me, it's so telling of how, like, people don't actually care about this shit. Like, people read this in 2013, they were like,
It's not just that. It's that you need a vocabulary for this stuff, right? It's not just that they don't care. Like, the median Republican, if you just said, Hillary Clinton maintains a private email server in a vacuum, is that good or bad? They would all be like, bad, terrible.
Then
you're like, context. Every Secretary of State has done it. Then they'd be like, maybe not, right?
Right.
What they were really looking for, it always felt to me, was the one big thing, right?
Yeah.
They tried Benghazi, and it just didn't quite catch, right? And the email server provided something that sounded really good.
Yeah.
There's enough to, like, sink your teeth into and bring the mainstream media along with you.
Yeah. It is, I mean, this gets much worse once the story goes to the New York Times. I think this really is a story about, like, laundering these things and the way that almost anything can just be turned into a scandal if you decide to treat it as one.
Right.
So, okay. So on March 2nd, 2015, we get like the story breaks big. And I feel like the headline in the New York Times story breaking this is extremely telling. So it says, Hillary Clinton used personal email account at State Department, comma, possibly breaking rules. So this is all kind of built around the fact that, like, maybe she broke these rules. The story does not mention explicitly that this is, in fact, against the rules. However, the rule was not passed until 2014, a year after she left her position as Secretary of State. So it would have been against the rule if she did it after the rule was passed, but when she did it, it wasn't against the rule.
I'm sorry, but I love possibly breaking rules.
Possibly breaking rules.
That is such a good headline because you can just see the conversation with the editor where they're like, hey, we can't figure out if this breaks the rule or not. And the editor's like, I got you covered.
Possibly. So, Peter, this is going to be grindingly boring.
Why are you going to make me listen to a Hillary Clinton speech?
No. We are going to read the headline of every single New York Times article that is published about this scandal in March of 2015. This is 1 month of headlines.
Fuck yes. I know it's weird to get excited when you just told me that it's going to be boring, but
unbelievably boring. Actually, why don't I send this to you? I put them in categories to make it like less grinding. So these are the hard news stories. This is like 8 days of hard news stories. And they're all written by the same reporter, which is a little bit weird.
Their email guy. All right. House panel seeks private talk with Hillary Clinton about email. No copies of Clinton emails on server, lawyer says. Using private email, Hillary Clinton thwarted record requests.
Thwarted.
Caught off guard by disclosure of emails, Democrats rally to Clinton's defense. House Benghazi committee requests Hillary Clinton email server.
They turn the committee into, like, all Hillary's emails all the time.
Hillary Clinton asks State Department to vet emails for release.
Tedious.
No emails from Clinton's time at State Department are on her server, lawyer says.
Identical.
In one case, State Department criticized use of personal email.
Just the most tedious, like, procedural little things. Ends up with a news story. And a lot of these are on page one.
You know, I've been playing devil's advocate a bit because...
You're a man and you went to law school.
Well, because God has called me to stand against Hillary Clinton. But, you know, this is without question a quote unquote scandal that is like the lowest level of political scandal.
Yeah.
As the New York Times, you have a couple of paths in front of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they chose a very specific one, which is basically what you would do if you were trying to turn a non-story into a story, right?
Yeah.
Which is just figure out a way to report on it every single day.
Peter, we are roughly 12% of the way through the stories that were published in March of 2015. So after we get the hard news stories, we start getting feature stories and opinion. So we get an open letter to hdr22@clintonemail.com by Maureen Dowd.
Maureen, that one's gold. Queen.
We get, in Clinton emails on Benghazi, a rare glimpse at her concerns. That's just like reading through them and being like, this is what she said. Mm-hmm. We get, as Hillary Clinton stays quiet about private emails, Republicans seize moment to criticize her.
There's something funny about Republicans seizing a moment to criticize Hillary Clinton. Like, yeah, that's...
Wow, weird. There's also, this one is very telling, in Congress, comma, a double standard for email. This is one about how no members of Congress are obligated to save their fucking emails, and hella of them either don't use email or have personal email accounts because they're not required to do any of the shit that Clinton is required to do. So it's right, just like, oh right. Yeah, this thing that we're like super duper pretending to care about for Hillary Clinton, every single member of Congress doesn't have to do that. LOL.
Right.
We get Hillary Clinton's email and the challenges of data storage, which is like about how hard it is to archive stuff. Vague email rules let federal agencies decide when to hit save or delete.
Uh-huh.
Membership in Clinton's email domain is remembered as a mark of status. Some like palace intrigue bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
We get an editorial about like her use of personal email was very bad. We also, it's very funny that Jeb Bush was the front runner for the Republican nomination at this time. So we have like a sort of other side story. Jeb Bush, a Clinton critic, took time releasing his own emails.
Take that, Jeb.
We get two articles about her handling of email as a New York State senator under like New York State laws. Two stories about that in 1 month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We then start to get meta stories about her handling of the crisis. So emails Hillary Clinton said were kept could be lost. Hillary Clinton on email controversy. White House deflects questions on Clinton emails. Hillary's messy habits by Frank Bruni. Obama did email Clinton but was unaware of details of her address. With the Clintons, comma, only the shadow knows by Maureen Dowd.
I can't do this, Mike.
We're almost halfway done.
I'm going to be catatonic.
When Clinton joined Obama administration, friction was over staff, not email. That's just like no one gave a shit about this email thing, but like here's some random drama from like 4 years ago.
Right.
We then get stories about her response. Hillary Clinton prepares to address her use of private email as Secretary of State. Before Clinton speaks, MoveOn.org gingerly weighs in. Hillary Clinton tries to quell controversy over private email. Then after her news conference, a Clinton email defense that turned defensive by Maggie Haberman. Hillary's prickly apologia by Frank Bruni. And then Democrats see no choice but Hillary Clinton in 2016. And then this is my favorite one. For White House spokesman, Clinton emails Trump Netanyahu speech. Subheadline. The White House spokesman spent nearly his entire news conference Tuesday discussing Hillary Clinton's email use as Secretary of State, not the speech by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel.
Oh my
Weird.
God.
Why is this guy spending so much time on this email thing? Wow. Is there any reason why they would be doing that? Huh?
While Hillary Clinton sends private emails, the Hurt Locker wins Best Picture.
So my count is probably wrong because there's like some duplicates in there. This is 44 stories in one fucking month. 1 month, Peter. I could have kept going.
God.
Like it is genuinely shocking, like going through the archives. I mean, like whatever you think about the email thing, like if the worst version of it is true, there is no cause for this much attention to be on it.
I can't get over like the sort of like battle that this sets off in my brain where I have all of these reasons that I really dislike Hillary Clinton as a politician and policymaker. And the greatest scandal that she's ever faced is like this dumb bullshit does not matter.
It is also funny reading these stories because they're done in this like weird, you know, inverted pyramid way where they're in this like fake formal language the New York Times uses where it's like it's very difficult to figure out like what's at stake.
Yeah, it's very interesting because this – it can even be cutting in the other direction. Like most recently, I was looking at coverage by the mainstream media of like the Clarence Thomas corruption shit, right? And the way they cover it is very similar. It's like Thomas's conduct raises questions, right?
Yeah, it's wild.
So what ends up happening is you have a rhetorical conflation of situations like the Clarence Thomas situation where he for sure violated the law.
Just plain corruption.
And situations like the Hillary Clinton shit, which where she not only probably didn't violate the law, but maybe didn't even violate informal rules, right? And they're using the same
type
of headline for both situations. So their efforts to be like fair and unbiased actually create this like enormous bias both cases.
Because everything has exactly the same tone of it too. And also, I mean, we talk about this all the time of like, people don't really read these stories, but like you sort of see the prominence of something, right? You notice like, oh, another front page story about Hillary Clinton's emails.
Right.
Like there must be something there.
I'm not going to read about it because it's so fucking boring, but I bet that's a big scandal.
So we're not going to go through obviously all of these stories individually, but I found a super interesting PhD dissertation about like the rhetoric that shows up in these stories. And like once you hear it, you see it fucking everywhere. So I am going to send you a 2-paragraph couplet from one of these articles.
Couplet.
A little couplet. A little dyad.
A spokesman for Mrs. Clinton defended her use of the personal email account and said she has been complying with, quote, the letter and spirit of the rules. Under federal law, however, letters and emails written and received by federal officials are considered government records and are supposed to be retained so that congressional committees, historians, and members of the news media can find them.
So the interesting word here is however.
Right.
So we have a spokesman saying she complied with all the rules. And then it says under federal rules, however, she has to retain all of her records. Well, she did retain her records.
Right. Which makes it makes it seem like they are very plainly stating that she did not violate the rules and that prior statement was false.
So here's another one.
In a 4-page fact sheet that accompanied a letter to Clinton supporters, Clinton spokeswoman Jennifer Palmieri stressed that Clinton was permitted to use her own email account as a government employee and that the same process concerning classification reviews would still be taking place had she used the standard state.gov email account used by most department employees. But even if the emails highlighted by the intelligence community prove innocuous, Clinton will still face questions about whether she set up the private server with the aim of avoiding scrutiny and whether she appropriately shielded such emails from possible foreign spies.
So all evidence indicates that nothing went wrong here, but it's going to raise questions about whether something went wrong here.
The Clinton will face questions framing is insane because what we're talking about is questions that will be asked by Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Clinton will face questions about her security procedures, as well as whether she drinks the blood of children.
But it's like, I love the structure of this, where it's like, there's no indication that Peter Shamshiri has millions of dollars of gambling debts, but the question of whether he has gambling debts may become an issue in future podcasts.
Right. It's also the most obnoxious mainstream media tick. Talking about politics as if they are not part of politics. You know, they're writing like 5 articles a day about this and being like, it's looking like this might impact the campaign. No shit, dude. You guys will not stop talking about
it. Later in 2015, in August of 2015, the New York Times has an article called Clinton's Emails Long Path to Controversy.
Oh my God.
Is it like, well, is it because the New York Times wrote 44 fucking stories about it in 1 month?
If like, the quote-unquote liberal mainstream media covered this shit the way Republicans do, every headline would have been like, despite Petraeus doing the same exact thing but worse.
Just with like whataboutism as the tag.
Right.
Yes.
If you are a consumer of Fox News, even when you're hearing about Republican misdeeds, you're actually hearing about Democratic misdeeds because they cannot discuss one without discussing the other, right? But if you consume mainstream media, you're getting like this diet of this, like, you know, quote unquote fair diet of both. The result is that liberals get wishy-washy bullshit and Republicans are always getting this like very intentional framing where it's sure, Donald Trump did this, but did you know that Hillary Clinton did this?
This was actually something that stood out to me from, I read a bunch of Breitbart articles and like Fox News articles, the way that they were framing this at the time. And like many of the stories, once they start combing through the emails, because of course, once they're out there, people just start like ginning up stories about what they find in them. Most of the stories that the right-wing media is telling about this at the time are just examples of like basic competency by Clinton and her team, framed as if they're like something dastardly. So there's this story in Fox News about how when they visited Russia, Clinton and everybody on her team left their BlackBerries on the plane because like they don't trust Russia. Yeah. Like, I don't know, it could get like a little chip put in it or some shit. And so Huma Abedin writes an email that says, "Want to make sure that DC is aware that those of us in the Russia traveling party will be leaving BlackBerries on the airplane once we touch down in Moscow tonight." And they're like, they knew the emails were insecure. They knew it was a security risk. And it's like, no, these are people who are like doing security. Like, they're concerned about security and they're taking steps to make sure that their emails don't get hacked.
Right.
And then Judicial Watch starts fucking sending a million fucking FOIA requests. Like, to this day, they're still trying to get fucking Hillary Clinton's emails.
Hell yeah.
One of them is like, we now have confirmation that Clinton used text messages as Secretary of State. That wasn't even like part of the scandal. Like, no one.
Right.
Like, she never said that she didn't use text messages. I don't really know how secure or insecure those are, but it's like confirmed. She used text messages.
I feel like it's worth mentioning that, like, while this is happening, Donald Trump is just being like, I don't think Mexican judges can fairly judge my cases.
And then all the Trump Foundation stuff, right? And then, of course, we find out later that, like, every single person on Trump's team is using their own private server. Ivanka and Jared are using ijkfamily.com. Uh-huh. Betsy DeVos used four different personal email accounts when she was Secretary of Education.
Who's engaging in whataboutism now?
So the next thing that happens is in July, we get the announcement that FBI is opening an investigation. The headline is "Criminal Inquiry is Sought in Clinton Email Use."
Hell yeah.
A year after they announced that this FBI investigation is happening, Comey does his famous press conference where he announces that the investigation has closed. We investigated, we interviewed everybody, we found the servers, we found all the emails, blah, blah, blah. "Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information."
I mean, that's terrible wording. When you say, although they did not intend to violate the law, the obvious inference is, but they did.
Yeah.
But in reality, what I believe he's trying to get at is that you need a certain level of intent to violate the law, and they didn't reach that, and therefore they did not violate the law.
Yeah, there's this weird thing, I think, where like everybody went out of their way to like not exonerate Clinton from this, even when presenting straightforwardly exonerative information.
It's like, look, Hillary Clinton did not violate the law. However, folks, I still believe that she is a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's like the whole fucking like mainstream media apparatus. That's the message.
Dude, Comey fucking hates her so much. Comey, like, his loathing of Clinton is like so palpable throughout his book.
What? In his book, Standing Near a Flag and Looking Up.
He's 6'5". He's never looked up in his life. His neck can't do that.
Believing in stuff, the James Comey story.
So they release this FBI report that has like the sort of everything. Like, it's kind of absurd how much time they spent looking into this. They find there are 36 email chains that discuss topics classified as secret at the time. In his book, he says, 8 times in those thousands of email exchanges across 4 years, Clinton and her team talked about topics designated as top secret, sometimes cryptically, sometimes obviously. Even though the people involved in the emails all had appropriate clearances and a need to know, they should have known that talking about top secret information on an unclassified system was a breach of rules governing classified materials.
If the conclusion here is like this went against internal Department of State rules but did not violate a law, then it's not really the job of the head of the FBI to weigh in.
Again, it's like the at worst scenario is that it broke like some internal rules. Like at my old human rights organization, you had to file your expenses within 30 days of traveling.
Yeah, and no one does that.
And like I broke that rule sometimes. Like
right. It's very interesting that Comey seems to view himself as somehow like speaking for the Department of State in this context, right? When it's just not his role.
Something that is like very illuminative and like we didn't know at the time is this whole thing of like sharing classified information and like storing classified information. To me, this is something that like I really only care about according to the specifics of like who was it shared with and what was like what specifically was the information. Like if you look at what Trump has done and what Biden has done, we have this, you know, Trump stealing documents. People are like, don't do that. That's illegal. And he's like, fuck you. And he does it anyway. And they're like, give it back. And he's like, fuck you. I'm not going to give it back.
Yeah. But what's worse substantively? Maintaining a separate private encrypted server for your emails or showing war plans to Kid Rock?
Yeah. But then I also think that the Biden one is also really instructive too, because it's like, you know, it appears that like they're taking boxes of documents out of the White House. They put them in this archive. Eventually somebody's going through them and they're like, oh shit, there's a couple classified documents in here.
Right.
And then Biden just immediately contacts the DOJ. He's like, hey, we'd better do like a full review to make sure there aren't any extra classified documents in this archive.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't fucking care. Like a lot of stuff is classified. Things are going to like leak out. Like it's called spillage. And that's like a very common thing for classified information because so much fucking shit is classified and the classification changes constantly and can be applied retroactively.
Yeah. Right.
Classified information being in boxes or being in people's email is like pretty routine at this point. So it's like the fact that, you know, Trump and Biden both technically broke the same rule, it's like it's just totally meaningless to me.
Right. To call it the same conduct is almost inherently disingenuous.
Also, we don't know exactly what the classified email was in these like 32 email chains, or like I've seen report that said it was 81 email chains. I don't fucking care, but like whatever. It's some amount of classified information ended up in her emails.
In the dozens, yes.
Exactly. But the actual mechanics involved are that, again, Clinton was only emailing with 13 people, and all of those were her high-level deputies. All of those people had state.gov email addresses. The way that it worked was those people kind of acted as gatekeepers. If you wanted to get a piece of information to Hillary Clinton, you would email one of them and they would decide whether or not to pass it on.
Uh-huh,
this is like fairly typical of large organizations. Like when I worked at Microsoft, I couldn't just like email Bill Gates. If there was like a piece of information that I thought he needed to know, I would sort of pass it up the chain and various people would decide to give it to him.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, people at the State Department are emailing Clinton's deputies, like her chief of staff, and saying, hey, there's an election in Tunisia next month, and we think the opposition party has a decent chance of winning.
Should we do the old rigoroni?
And then those people would typically forward that on to Clinton with like FYI or something.
Yeah.
So I think the public got this sense that Clinton was just like spraying classified information like outside of the State Department and just like telling anyone who would listen, like, look at this list of spies that we have. But like, this is almost universally just like people telling her stuff and her being like, okay.
Yeah.
The vast majority of the emails Clinton just ignored.
Right.
And then also, we don't know exactly how many, but it appears that the majority of the top secret information was about drone strikes. Because the drone program itself is still technically classified as top secret, even though everyone fucking knows that it's happening.
Yeah.
So anything, if it's like yesterday they did a drone strike in like this city in Pakistan, even if that's in the newspaper, it is still technically top secret.
Right.
So it appears most of the information was just like essentially publicly available or like normal information. And like, again, the actual scandal is the drone program. Not the fact that some of this was stored on a fucking external server.
Sorry, but this is what's driving me insane, because I'm sort of like, if someone emailed her being like, hey, FYI, you know, we just murdered that United States citizen.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, okay, thanks. The scandal here is apparently information security.
Rather
than like the Constitution.
Also, a lot of the classified information also just appears to be these weird memos that she's getting from Sidney Blumenthal.
Yeah, yeah.
So it comes out in the Benghazi hearings that before the Benghazi attack, he's like, hey, there's been these like sort of kidnappings and sort of violent events throughout Libya. And like, we think it's Gaddafi loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
And like that technically is top secret. Like a lot of the information that he's sending her is from like government sources or like from foreign press reports or whatever. But it's not clear that he knows that it's top secret. And she also doesn't know that it's top secret.
Uh-huh.
So it's just like, this is my analysis of world events. The vast majority of classified information that she was getting was not labeled as classified.
Maybe I misrecalled. I thought that there were no emails
labeled classified.
Most of them were not labeled. There were a couple, I think it was like eight or something, that had a paragraph marked with C. They put like parentheses C in it. And like that means the information in that specific paragraph is confidential. But then also this is also in keeping with her general like boomer use of technology. She's like, I didn't know that. We did like what? Like she didn't know that that was like a classification. And then most of these emails are coming from State Department employees. And she's like, I just kind of assumed like I would look at the information itself. Right. If somebody sent me like this is the name of a spy that we have, she'd be like, holy shit, we definitely need this not to get out. But if it's like kind of basic information, like one of the classified pieces of information was that like Kofi Annan was stepping down as like a peace envoy for the UN.
Okay.
Like you wouldn't look at that and be like, ooh, that's classified.
Spicy.
This is one of the things is like the only extent to which this controversy is like interesting on the merits is how much information is classified for like no fucking reason and how totally arbitrary it is. There's examples of people who will like put information in books and then later the CIA or whoever will call it top secret.
Mm.
And they're like, this is on your website.
Fucking like Reality Winner got busted for leaking something that was relatively common knowledge at the time, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, sources and methods.
Another thing that we don't know until Comey's book comes out is, you know, they've done this like year-long investigation. They have all of the information. The final step of the investigation is interviewing Hillary Clinton.
This is sort of a standard investigative tactic where you, want to be able to pin them in lies. You want to know as much as possible so that you're not caught off guard by what they say.
This is why when your boss called you into her office, you were like, is this about my podcast? Is this about me using
when I got dragged in, I was like, I bet they know everything. Like when they're... When they were like, we want to talk to you about the 5-4 podcast, I immediately knew that they had some associate listen to every episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But then what I feel like, again, like doesn't get any like credit is that like they bring in Hillary Clinton. They do this, five FBI agents interview her for 3 hours. She doesn't tell one lie. They don't catch her in anything. And like at every point in the investigation – even Comey, who fucking hates her, like has to admit in his book, he's like, no, they were totally transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we asked for, like they handed it over. We caught nobody in any lies. Nobody like got busted for anything. And like it appears they wanted to catch her in something.
Yeah.
Again, this like this stereotype of Hillary is this like scheming, manipulative monster. And like behind the scenes, she's just like, you're right. It was pretty dumb. Here's like how it happened. And then all of the emails, all the written records, they interview all these people, they get a million other hard drives. It all corroborates her account.
Right.
This is just not somebody who thinks very much about technology and who genuinely believed at the time that her emails were safe and secure and private and that she wasn't breaking any laws.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is like evidence for this like Hillary devious schemer narrative.
Right. I mean, because the Hillary as devious schemer narrative pre-exists.
Oh, totally.
There are so many people itching to believe that she is corrupt.
Yeah.
And frankly, you know, look, I'm not even
careful.
I'm not even inclined to say that she's not. Right. But the point is that they have that. And so as soon as you affirm that prior, they're so willing to believe that it's true.
This
right?
is what was so striking about the media after the report comes out, that a lot of it is sort of like, you know, it poses more questions. Like The New York Times publishes a story called FBI Findings Damage Many of Hillary Clinton's Claims. So they focus on like the extremely minor thing. Like she had said in an interview, like, I didn't send any classified information.
Right.
And they're like, but there is classified information. She's still not really technically lying, and that's like the only lie that they can catch her in.
Right. She's doing little politician white lies, right?
Well, things I don't even think that she knew. I think it was before this report had come out, and like considering no one fucking knows what's classified and what's not, I think she was speaking from like what she genuinely thought was the truth at the time. And also, even if she told a little dumb lie, it's like ultimately there's nothing in this FBI report.
Right.
So one person – I hate this. One person who was like really good on this at the time was Kevin Drum, who's like like a weird like housing crisis truther now.
Mother Jones blogger.
Yeah. And I was yelling at him yesterday. But he's one of the only people who like – actually like read the FBI report.
By the way, this is like a something that you can relate to, like just being the only person to Read the Report makes you like the foremost expert in media.
Dude, it's crazy. Read the PDF. So he wrote this just after the report comes out. He says, "This report is pretty much an almost complete exoneration of Hillary Clinton. Uh-huh. She wasn't prohibited from using a personal device or a personal email account, and others at State did it routinely. She's told the truth all along about why she did it. Colin Powell did indeed advise her about using personal email shortly after she took office, but she chose to follow the rules rather than skirt them as Powell did. She didn't take her BlackBerry into her office. She communicated with only a very select group of people. She took no part in deciding which emails were personal before handing them over to State. She had nothing to do with erasing information on the server. She and her staff all believed at the time that they were careful not to conduct sensitive conversations over unclassified email systems. And there's no evidence that her server was ever hacked."
Right.
Every single thing that people have been saying and like questions raised over the last 18 months just aren't true. Like these are the answers to the questions.
Right. Every headline should have been FBI concludes Clinton did not violate the law.
Yeah. But like that was not conveyed.
Right.
So the exonerative FBI report comes out on July 5th. Mm-hmm. For the rest of the summer, we get the conventions, like announcements of running mates. On July 23rd, we get the hack of the DNC emails. Like, you know, this is sort of like the stuff that we remember from the 2016 election. We also, in July, get the release of Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go to the polls, yeah. Of course.
And we have the last weekend where hope seemed possible in America.
Yeah. By the way, I still remember just being outside and getting nearly bumped into repeatedly by people who were playing Pokemon Go. It was surreal.
It was great. Before those kids started finding bodies, it was great. And then, you know, September, we get the debates. The email story basically goes dark. Uh-huh. This is the summer when the right-wing media is screaming about Seth Rich and the left-wing media is screaming about the Clinton Foundation, which is like could be its own fucking episode. Like we've shifted from one like non-scandal to like another non-scandal. And we then, you know, in October, we get the Access Hollywood tape. We get WikiLeaks releasing the Podesta emails. Like it's all the temperature is rising at this point.
Yeah.
We also, at the end of the month, I think importantly, we have Clinton up in the polls and there's this sort of sense of invincibility. Like it's sort of inevitable. You know, they're talking about like flipping Arizona this time.
Right,
it's just like, look, we all know that like Clinton's going to be the next president. Like come the fuck on, right? So on October 27th, according to his book, James Comey gets like a phone call, email, whatever, by the team that is investigating this thing where Anthony Weiner, the husband of Huma Abedin, who's like an aide to Hillary Clinton, was sexting a 15-year-old girl. Mm-hmm. And as part of this investigation, they look at his laptop. And as they're like going through the files, they're like, this is weird. They find, according to his book, hundreds of thousands of emails from Hillary Clinton.
What?
Which is very weird because she only sent 60,000 emails her entire time at State. And to this day, we don't actually know why those emails were on his laptop. I don't know if like Huma was using it for a while. I guess she used to forward him emails to like print stuff out. But like it's all just kind of weird that they were all on his hard drive.
I mean, it must have just been shared computer or shared server or something, right?
Exactly. Like I really, there's probably not like a remotely interesting explanation. But like, yes, all of these emails are on there. And it's like, okay, we now have the hard drive. You got to get a warrant to look at these because like the existing warrant doesn't cover, it only covers stuff related to the sexting. Uh-huh. So this laptop contains emails from Hillary Clinton's first 2 months at the State Department. This is before she sets up her private server and she's still using her like Hillary at @ATTAOLBlackberry.com or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And apparently this is like the white whale for Comey. They've been looking for this as part of the FBI investigation. They never found these like missing emails and it's like missing period of her life, whatever. So he finds this out. He says in the book, he doesn't know how long this investigation is going to take. Obviously, we need to look through it. There's like hundreds of thousands of emails. We don't know how long it's going to take.
Right.
And his fear is that they're going to initiate this investigation. Clinton is going to win the presidency. And then like a month after she wins, he's going to be like, oh, actually, we found criminal behavior in her emails.
I mean, we'll get there. But this is James Comey's excuse for putting out a damaging statement about Hillary Clinton a week and a half before the election.
11 days. Yep.
I love him.
I'm going to send you the paragraph from his book where he lays this out.
On behalf of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, an organization whose success relies on the public trust. Oh, God. I hate him so much. on behalf of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, an organization whose success relies on the public trust, I had testified under oath in public hearings to Congress and the American people that this case was finished. Now I knew that was no longer true. To remain silent at this point, while taking the step of getting a search warrant to review thousands of Hillary Clinton's emails, would be an affirmative act of concealment.
Concealment.
That would mean the director of the FBI had misled and was continuing to mislead Congress and the American people. What's interesting about this is that he's admitting that his initial statement was not accurate. So, like, he fucked up the initial statement.
I don't know that he did, though. I mean, I think it's like he testified under oath, I guess, that, like, the investigation was closed. They looked into everything.
Okay. Yeah,
and then
fair enough. Okay.
They're reopening it. And he's like, this makes me a liar. Well, not really. I mean, you were speaking from what you knew at the time.
Well, I guess he's saying if he did not come out and say we're reopening it, that would make him a liar.
I guess the whole thing just makes no fucking sense to me when all he has at this point is just the existence of emails. He easily could have gotten a search warrant, figured out at least, like, you don't necessarily have to go through every single email, but you could have gone through and, like, figured out what it was and, like, waited 48 hours or some shit. I mean, like, is this worth announcing?
I guess he's in. I guess it, you know, the favorable read to James Comey is that he's in a really tough space, right? Because both staying silent and going public makes you look like a political actor of some sort.
This whole chapter is him, like, deliberating of, like, whether to come forward or whether to, what he says, conceal. That's what the option is, like, speak or conceal. Those are the two options.
Mm-hmm.
He also has a little scene afterwards where he's, like, getting up from the meeting and one of his, like, junior lawyers is like, James, aren't you worried that this will throw the election to Donald Trump?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, I began my reply by thanking her for asking that question. It's a great question, I said, but not for a moment can I consider it, because down that path lies the death of the FBI as an independent force in American life. If we start making decisions based on whose political fortunes will be affected, we are lost.
Right, but he is making a decision based on the political fortunes of the
exactly.
FBI.
Exactly. There's no non-political option available.
Right.
But it's like he
right.
also wants to have the moral high ground.
That's why he's so fucking tiresome and his stupid book. What's his book called? It's something about, like, higher principles or something.
A higher calling, I think.
Give me a fucking break.
I know.
Just, like, literally someone who believes he is, like, above such considerations. When here he is openly pontificating about, like, the relative institutional power of the FBI.
The whole thing, the thing that drives me nuts about this is that he's making a political assessment of, like, how it will look specifically to Republicans, right? If she gets elected and then we announce that, like, oh, there's some sort of criminal something something, Republicans are going to jump down our throats, which is absolutely fucking true. But that is just an incentive for Republicans to be even more deranged, right? Because then they get this, like, mewling response.
Right.
But the actual merits of the case, like, the thing that is so fucking weird to me about this entire, like, the way that he presents the calculation, he's like, what if we found criminal misconduct? Well, okay, you have her emails from 4 fucking years in office. Nothing. She's complied with everything. She's been completely transparent. You haven't caught her in a single lie. You now have emails from 2 months?
Right.
Why would you assume that you're now going to find criminal shit?
Maybe think about probabilities here rather than just, well, what's the worst case scenario?
Exactly.
Right?
And also, this is also so fucking annoying. The minute they start investigating the emails, they find out it doesn't contain any from the, like, 2 month period in question. It's like, oh, whoops, like, I guess some of them were, like, mistagged or something.
Uh-huh.
This was, I think this was just, like, objectively the wrong call. Because, like, the minute they start looking, it's like, oh, they're all duplicates. And there's just nothing there. And it only actually ends up taking them, like, 6 days to do the entire assessment.
Yeah. I honestly don't know if I care enough about the Comey call. In my mind, he's so far downstream of so much bullshit that it's not really worth thinking that much about.
And also, I mean, ultimately, if this threw the election, it's not the letter that threw the election. It's the fact that the New York Times dedicated the entire front page the following day above the fold half of the front page the next day above the fold, and 10 front page stories over the following 6 days. So there's a post-election analysis that says, in 6 days, the New York Times ran as many cover stories about Hillary Clinton's emails as they did about all policy issues combined in the 69 days leading up to the election. Journalists also could have looked at this and been like, oh, this is just like a boring procedural thing. And like, we don't know anything.
I had a couple of friends who were Hillary campaign staffers. And I spent the entire election season receiving messages from them expressing irritation with media coverage of Hillary. And I remember them flipping out when this happened.
Yeah.
Being like, I can't believe Comey would do this. And I remember just being like, come on, she's not going to lose. Relax.
Yeah, yeah, that's how
like, there's
too.
Literally nothing to worry about.
Yeah.
Completely whiffed.
I mean, I think that like the question of like whether Comey affected the election, I think you're absolutely right. I think like there was so much fucking salt in the soil at that point around this whole email thing that I think you could easily make the argument that like, yes, the Comey letter did affect the election. Like the her polls fucking cratered immediately. They cratered more in swing states. Like, I think that that is like a defensible case to make. I also think that like, yeah, it never would have happened if the email story hadn't gotten 44 fucking stories in 1 month.
Right. And if I can sort of turn it into a criticism of her as a candidate, or at least frame it that way, this doesn't work unless people are inclined to believe that she is shady.
Yeah, there's like a weird circular thing too. Yeah, that like
right.
The belief creates a belief among the media that she's shady, and then the media reinforces that, which then reinforces the belief among the population that she's shady, and like and around and around.
I think there's a very good argument that she was an awful candidate, and a lot of that is like not entirely her fault.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like the fact that she was the focus of an extended and ongoing decades-long propaganda effort, right?
Yeah.
And that does not make a good presidential candidate.
The way after reading about this for 2 weeks, the way that I've been thinking about it is that like I think she would have been a good president and she would have had a nightmare presidency.
Yeah.
Day one, impeachment hearings, like it just would have been a fucking nightmare, like nonstop this bullshit. And like you don't want to have a political system that just like drums people out of public life because they're the subject of bad faith attacks. Like that's really toxic and bad. But on the other hand, like centrist pragmatic politics is all about sort of like public polling and like, you know, we're not saying anything on the merits, but like we have to appeal to the median voter. And you could make like a centrist case for like, yeah, some people are just too poisonous to be in public life. And like, I don't know that I like think that about Hillary Clinton, but it's like, you could make like a sort of pragmatic case that like, once you reach a certain level of toxicity as a public figure, you just need to bow out.
Not to get too deep into it, but like, you know, Bill was also the subject of a lot of bile, but he had wild charisma.
And he's a dude as well.
Yeah, no, it's different for sure. I'm not saying it's the same thing, but I'm not entirely sure that Hillary Clinton was a particularly talented politician. You know,
it also doesn't help.
The Senate race in New York. A dead raccoon on the side of the road, if you put a D next to it, is going to win the Senate race New York.
Yeah.
All I know is that I would have enjoyed a Clinton presidency because for all the reasons that you're saying, it would have been miserable. Because like, whatever, you get some Democratic Supreme Court appointments.
Yeah.
Maybe like one shitty piece of infrastructure legislation.
Yeah.
And then Hillary Clinton gets impeached. That's my definition of a good time.
And then, God, I can't remember her running mate now. Joe Klein?
you're just saying words. It was Tim Ryan, right?
Was it Tim Ryan?
No.
Paul Ryan. That's Mitt Romney's running name. Tim Kaine. Wait, that's what it is.
Tim Kaine. I was combining them. I was also just saying names. God, we have to cut that. That's too embarrassing that neither of us remember the running mate, Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine of Virginia. Okay.
You've got Google open in front of you.
Right. I'm on Tim Kaine, born 1946, of course.
I also think at the most basic level, I was looking this up this morning. You know, she won the popular vote by 3 million. So ultimately, you could say like the fucking Electoral College fucked her. Although, of course, if the Electoral College wasn't around, then the campaigns would have been different, multiverse, blah, blah, blah. But also, it ultimately came down to 79,000 votes in like whatever the three states were. And like anything could affect 79,000 votes. So like you could say it was the Comey letter. You could say it was like reigned in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
I also, the thing that sort of bugs me about that election specifically, and like, I hope that it was like a bit of a wake up call, was like just how little like policy discussion there was. Yeah. And if this was an election like remotely about policy, it would have been a fucking blowout for Hillary.
Of course.
Yeah. I want to end with a quote from a good Paul Krugman column about this. This is a podcast about the American bedumbing, and I feel like we need to look at like broader historical trends in this.
Americans of a certain age who follow politics and policy closely still have vivid memories of the 2000 election. Bad memories. And not just because the man who lost the popular vote somehow ended up in office. For the campaign leading up to that endgame was nightmarish too. You see, one candidate, George W. Bush, was dishonest in a way that was unprecedented in U.S. politics. Most notably, he proposed big tax cuts for the rich while insisting that they were targeted for the middle class. These campaign lies presaged what would happen during his administration, an administration that, let us not forget, took America to war on false pretenses. Yet throughout the campaign, most media coverage gave the impression that Mr. Bush was a bluff, straightforward guy, while portraying Al Gore, whose policy proposals added up, as slippery and dishonest. Mr. Gore's mendacity was supposedly demonstrated by trivial anecdotes, none significant, some of them simply false. No, he never claimed to have invented the internet, but the image stuck.
We've seen this weird inversion of reality over and over again, and the media is like complicit in allowing this to happen. Like if you zoom out, like the scandals of Hillary Clinton and the scandals of Donald Trump were not remotely comparable.
Right.
One of the main drivers of people who sort of talked themselves into voting for Trump was like, well, they're both corrupt.
Yeah.
Well, they both lie.
Right. And I think a lot of what's happening with Trump, and to a lesser degree with Bush, is that they have the aesthetics of honesty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Where people confuse bluntness with honesty.
Yeah.
And the other side of this is that a lot of people think, yeah, Trump says stuff out loud that's not true, but Hillary Clinton just lies in that politician way.
Yeah.
She's shifty. She's cagey. She dodges questions, right? That's the same thing at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't want to pretend that the like level of dishonesty that you get out of Donald Trump is not unprecedented. It's absolutely unprecedented. But I think that a lot of people feel that politicians are deeply dishonest, that the way that they bullshit their way around every question they're asked is inherently dishonest, such that someone feeding lies directly into their id is acceptable to them.
I like how you brought us back to you being problematic about Hillary Clinton. We've achieved nothing. We've made no progress. You're in the same place.
After Hillary and then watching like Liz Warren and Amy Klobuchar just like flail, I do sort of believe that the first female president's going to be a Republican. I feel it in my bones.
Fuck.